time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitt Madness.
And here he goes. Defense win championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Your host, Dejon Hughes.
Welcome back into Mid-Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. Good morning on this Saturday morning. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes. Excited to drop through an hour's worth of what's happening around the state of Michigan within the athletic realm. Tons going down in the sports world. We're going to check in on our Detroit Pistons and what's happening in their playoff series and what they can do to come out victorious. Then we'll touch in on the Tigers, see where the beginning of their season is. And trust me, after the week they've had, there's tons and tons to talk about there. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the upcoming NBA draft, what the transfer portal is looking like, coaching changes and such here in the state of Michigan and around the country as a whole, touching on the NBA playoffs as well, before getting into our picks to end out the show. I've had a fantastic week so far. Lacrosse season is still just rumbling along. We're almost to the end. I mean, next week ends our regular season, and then we're off into the playoff race. So I'm feeling good. I think we've learned a lot this year. I think we've gotten better this year, and we're all going to be looking forward to the offseason and getting better to prepare for next season as well. Summer lacrosse is right around the corner. The playoffs are here for professional lacrosse in the box game, and then it's conference championship week for college lacrosse with Selection Sunday on Sunday, and then the NCAA tournament will unfold. This is one of my favorite parts of the year. There's basically always something to watch when it comes to sports. I mean, winter into summer, that stretch, winter, spring, summer, fire, and I'm here for it. I'm excited. WNBA right around the corner as well. In a couple of years, we'll be talking the Detroit blank making their way and playing in the WNBA. We're hoping that it is the Shock, but we will not be able to know that until, well, at least maybe next year or until they start to roll out more information on that. But we don't have that at the current moment. So once we learn more, obviously, as always, we'll keep you updated. Looking at, well, what's happening with our Pistons. We'll start with the leaders. Cade Cunningham still leading things offensively. 23.9 points per game, 9.9 assists, just 3.7 turnovers, shooting 46% from the field in 33.9 minutes of play. Jalen Duren has 10.5 rebounds, 19.5 points, shooting 65% of the field in 28.2 minutes. Assur Thompson, 2 steals, 1.5 turnovers, 26 minutes. And Isaiah Stewart, 1.6 blocks, 0.3 steals, 5 rebounds, 117.8 points per game, 45.6 rebounds, 27.8 assists. And, well, catching those up who may have no clue of what is happening in this first-round playoff series, the Detroit Pistons were the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. And after the play-in, they were awarded the opportunity to play the Orlando Magic. The Magic came out swinging as they won game one, 112-101. Then the Pistons were able to battle back and win game two, 98-83, before dropping two in a row, games three and four, 113-105 and 94-88. And then the Pistons did the business that we needed them to handle in game five, which was a legendary game in playoff matters for both squads, the Magic and the Pistons. We'll touch on the Magic first. Paolo Banchero, absolutely stunning from the field. 17-31, 5-for-12 from the free throw line. 45 points for Banchero. Also had 9 rebounds, 7 assists, 6 turnovers, and 41 minutes of play. The Magic shoot 48% from the field, 45 from the 3, 53 from the free throw line. They only had 16 turnovers in this game and grabbed 33 rebounds. They did not lead at all in this game that was at Little Caesars Arena. On the other side, the Pistons got another legendary, historic record book performance from Cade Icewood Cunningham. Get him another pair of buffs right now. He needs the Cartier sunglasses on his face because the boy has been playing like none other than an absolute Detroit legend. He shoots 13 of 23, 14 of 14 from the free throw line for 45 points. 15 rebounds, 6 assists for Asir Thompson. Only 5 turnovers for Thompson, 36 minutes in his play. 49 from the field, 36 from behind the arc, 80 from the charity stripe for the Pistons. 17 turnovers, grabbed 49 rebounds, and led for 99% of this game, the largest lead being 17. You guys know exactly how Game 6 went as you guys are listening to this. As you know, I record on Friday, so that game was Friday night, and I'm not able to know, but we know heading into the game, I can talk about what's going to happen. They gave the Pistons a 65.4% chance to win, a 34.6% chance for Orlando. I mean, Pistons have their backs against the wall. This one will be down in the Kia Center in Orlando, Florida. Tobias Harris and Kevin Huerter are both game-time decisions with ankle and thigh injuries, respectively. Meanwhile, Franz Wagner is out with a calf injury until at least Sunday. Jonathan Isaac also out with a knee injury. They call him a game-time decision. So, the Pistons kind of have some favor on their side in that game 6 with a couple huge injuries, and most notably Franz Wagner, the number 2 option on this Magic team. Pistons are going to have to win that game to force a game 7. So game 7 would be Sunday. Doesn't look like they have a time yet for that game, but they do have the game marked as 7 or on Sunday for Game 7, if necessary. It would be at Little Caesars Arena. They're giving the Pistons a 79.1% chance to win if it makes it to 7 games, just 20.9% chance for Orlando. And I imagine a lot of that has to do with the availability of Franz Wagner and how available or unavailable he will be for these next 2 games for the Pistons. But, I mean, the main issue in all of these Pistons games so far in this series has been turnovers and free throw shooting. It has been killing them. And then any games that they have lost the rebounding battle have also been a huge issue for them. They won the rebounding and turnover. Oh, they lost the turnover battle, but won the rebounding battle in game 2, and they won that one. You've seen the same thing in game 5, where they were able to dominate the rebounding battle, winning it 49-33. They won the turnover battle, or lost the turnover battle again by 1 in this game, but either way, they came out victorious in both of those games. When you look at game 1, they lost the turnover battle 45-39. When you look at game 3, they lost the rebounding battle, they lost the rebounding battle 48-42, and they lost the turnover battle 16-14 in that game as well. When you look at game 4, they lost the rebounding battle 52-49, but lost the turnover battle 20-12. So those are 2 things that have been huge. Pistons have only shot over 74% in 1 game from the free throw line. And that was, I believe, in the most recent game, game 5, where they shot 80%. In game 2, they shot 58% and was still able to win that game. It's absolutely bonkers to me how bad the free throw shooting has been for the Pistons. But if they're not able to fix that and the turnover issues and the rebounding issues as well, then they're not only looking at elimination in this Orlando Magic series, but how are you going to fare against either the Toronto Raptors or the Cleveland Cavaliers in the next round if those issues persist? Those teams are better defensive teams. Those teams are better offensive teams. Those teams are more willing to grab rebounds. How can you compete with a team that's going to be of a better caliber than the Magic if you're struggling against the Orlando Magic? So tons of things for the Pistons to take a look at and focus on over the next couple of games. Really, I mean, they don't really have a lot of time to fix them. They have to fix them now, or they will be on their way to Cancun with an early exit to the Orlando Magic. They don't want to be one of 7 1 seeds to lose to 8 seeds in the NBA Finals. It does not happen, or NBA playoffs, excuse me. It does not happen often, but that does not mean it is impossible, and that does not mean it will not happen. As we can see, the Pistons are on the brink. They have to win both games 6 and 7 to avoid that. So when we talk next week, we will know exactly whether or not the Pistons will be continuing their season and moving on in the playoffs, or if they will be packing things up and getting prepared for the NBA draft and looking forward to the offseason. So hopefully, fingers crossed, that the Pistons will be forcing a Game 7 and winning that Game 7 to move on and play the winner of the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Toronto Raptors. But there is no guarantee. When we look at the NBA playoffs overall, the Thunder have comfortably moved on, sweeping the Suns 4-0. The Spurs gave the Trailblazers a gentleman's sweep and let them have one game, so they have moved on to the second round as well. They already know their opponent, as the Timberwolves took care of the Nuggets on Thursday night to win that series 4-2. So now the Timberwolves and Spurs will start on May 4th. That's Monday for game one, which we'll dive deeper into that game within our picks. But also looking at the rest of the Western Conference, only one series left to be determined. It's the 4-seeded Lakers against the 5-seeded Rockets. The Lakers currently lead the series 3-2 as I'm recording. So that game was also Friday night at 9:30 p.m. on Prime Video. So those of you out there listening know exactly what happened in that matchup and whether they're going to be seeing a Game 7 on Sunday or if the Lakers are going to be moving on for a matchup with the Thunder. Meanwhile, the Eastern Conference, a totally different story. Only one team has punched their ticket to the conference semifinals so far. That is the New York Knicks, who took care of the Atlanta Hawks Thursday night, 140-89, in that historic playoff beatdown. 51-point victory for the Knicks, their largest in playoff history. I also believe to be the largest loss for the Hawks in playoff history, and I believe the largest margin of victory for any team in playoff history. They move on, win that series 4-2. Also Thursday night, the Celtics and the 76ers got busy, and the 76ers, with the help of Paul George, Joel Embiid, Tyrese Maxey, VJ Edgecombe, and company, were able to down the Celtics, and they were able to move on and force a game seven. So the 2-seeded Celtics will host the 7-seeded 76ers on Saturday, later today, 7:30 p.m., NBC and Peacock, for game seven to see who will be moving on to take on the Knicks in the conference semis. Meanwhile, we've already talked a ton about the Pistons and what their matchup is looking like and what needs to happen for them to move forward. The opponent is still up for grabs as well. Currently, as we're recording, the Cavaliers, 4-seeded, lead the 5-seeded Raptors 3-2 in that series. Game 6, Friday night at 7:30 p.m. on Prime Video. So you guys all know exactly whether the Raptors were able to force a Game 7 for Sunday, or as the Cavs are moving on and will be awaiting their opponent between the Pistons and Magic, or maybe even that series has already been figured out and the Magic are moving on and the Pistons were not able to force a Game 7. But what we do know is there are four teams that have punched their spot and four more teams that will punch their spot before this weekend is over. So by the time we talk again next week, we'll be talking about the conference semifinals and whether or not the Pistons were able to make it there. And honestly, I would love for the Pistons to make it there, because I'm starting to run out of things to talk about around here. And the Pistons are one of the most exciting things. And plus, it's been since forever since we've seen the Pistons have sustained success within the playoffs. And us Pistons fans, at least me, myself, are dying to see it. But Cade Cunningham needs a ton of help if they're going to have success. Jalen Duren has been waking up a little bit in the past couple of games. Tobias Harris has to bring that veteranism to the floor. Duncan Robinson and Caris LeVert have to begin to hit shots, and company have to show up to help Cade. But enough of the Pistons talk. We'll talk more about what's happening in the NBA and the playoffs when we come back again next week. After the break, we'll be talking about the Detroit Tigers over in Comerica Park with more Mid-Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket.
Hey, dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm going to keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times? When we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while. Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/blood pressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
As a young teenage boy, I didn't even know what autism was. How do you even spell that? A few years later, I heard that a friend's cousin's son had been diagnosed with autism.
I still wasn't sure what that really meant.
When I went to college, my roommate's brother had autism. When I moved to the city for work, my best friend called me and told me his son had been diagnosed with autism. We were both in shock. I still remember the day I walked into the house and saw that look on my wife's face. I knew something was wrong. I'll never forget how I felt when she said, "Our son has autism."
Autism is getting closer to home. Today, one in 110 children is diagnosed with autism. That's a 600% increase in the last 20 years. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
Ugh, what are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
What are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. It's been a long time since we've had an adventure in the forest.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
You're right. I should get out.
Yeah, the forest is not that far away.
Hey, Mom!
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Mid-Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. It's time for us to skip, jump, hop on over to Comerica Park and talk about our Detroit Tigers, who are basically just a month into their season. And quite a bit has happened over the last week, so we have a ton to talk about over this next few minutes. So you can get all caught up on what is happening with our beloved baseball team here in the Mitten State. Starting with the standings, they are still atop of the AL Central, but they are now tied in that first place spot with the Cleveland Guardians. Both teams sitting at 500 at 16-16. They have a 1.5 game lead on the White Sox, who are 14-17, a 2-game lead on the Twins, who are 14-18, and the Royals are 12-19, sitting 3.5 games back from the leaders. Those leaders, when looking at the American League overall, are sitting tied for fourth. The Yankees are at the top at 20-11. The Tampa Bay Rays are a game and a half back at 18-12. The Athletics are 17-14, 3 games back. And then there goes the Tigers, Guardians, and Mariners, who are all tied at 16-16, 4.5 games back from the leaders. 15-16, 5 games back, and just a half game back of the Tigers and Guardians are the Rangers and Orioles at as well in the American League. When you look at the MLB overall, the Tigers have now climbed to about 10th, maybe 12th in the league at that 500 record, sitting 6 games behind the Braves, who are 22-10 on the year. The Braves are the team that just most recently played the Tigers, so we'll be diving into that series here in just a moment. But that's after we check in with our team leaders. Still leading the batting average category, Kevin McGonigal, who's 0.328, his on-base percentage of 0.426, slugging percentage 0.509. Kerry Carpenter leads the team in home run jacks, though he's got 6 of them, while his average is just 0.224, and he's got 17 RBIs. Dylan Dingler is the main man when it comes to batting runs in, though. His RBIs sitting at 20 as he leads the team. He's got 5 homers and a 0.247 ERA. On the pitching side of things, it's Skubal back in the front of all 3 categories. I mean, he might slip here and there, but it won't take long for him to regain his crown. His ERA sitting at 2.70. He's got 3 wins and 45 strikeouts on the year as well to pace the Tigers on the pitching side. Runs, 142 of them, is good for 13th in the MLB. The team's batting average of .250 is good for 8th. Their on-base percentage of .333 is 6th in the MLB, and their slugging percentage of .411 is 7th. Pitching, on the other hand, their ERA, 3.96, tied for 10th in the league. Quality starts of 15th is tied for 3rd. Their whip at 1.32, tied for 16th. And their opponent batting average of .240 is good for 14th in the MLB. So, I mean, honestly, both the pitching and batting so far kind of even across the board, kind of explains why when one thing goes bad, the other goes bad, and then the game kind of overall is just bad. But, I mean, hey, they're even. They're 500, so they're not winning more games than they're losing, but they're not losing more games than they're winning. So something does eventually have to change and make way for the Tigers to be just a tad bit better. But until then, they're probably going to be a middle-of-the-road 500 team. They're coming off two back-to-back 2-1 series losses. The first was to Cincinnati. The Reds, both of these series were on the road. They lost 9-8, giving Ashcraft the win on Friday the 24th. Then they lost 9-2, giving Singer the win on the 25th. And then they were able to win on Sunday the 26th, giving Herder the win, his third of the year. And the Tigers went 8-3 in that game, boosting their record to 15-14 after that series. And then the very next series was down in Atlanta on the road. They lose game one, 5-2. Perez wins it 2-1. And then Wednesday, 4-3, they lose to Lopez, who now advances to 2-1 on the year. And then you have Thursday, where the Tigers win 5-2, improving their record to 16-16. Anderson picks up the win there. Jansen and Flaherty picked up losses against Cincinnati, and then Mize and Jansen both picked up losses against Atlanta. Most importantly, we want to look at that first game of the series, the one that we lost 5-2, and Martin Perez throws five scoreless innings, as the Braves did beat the Tigers 5-2, but that wasn't the real issue here. In the third inning, the Tigers lost their starting pitcher, Casey Mize, in the game. So that really took a toll on the Tigers throughout this game. Also, they lost center fielder Javi Baez, who left out on a cart after injuring his right foot on a play at first base in the fifth inning. He hit the ball, was running, trying to beat out the throw, and he hit the base awkwardly with his left foot, and his right foot folded under his leg while he fell. So that's something to also keep an eye on as well. They didn't really explain, Casey Mize was removed after straining his groin covering first base on a ground ball to first baseman Spencer Torkelson. He lasted 2 1/3 innings, during which he gave up 2 runs, 3 hits, and a walk while striking out 3. So we don't know a ton more about what is happening with Javi Baez and his injury, but we do know that they both have been on the IR after they left early. Mize went on the 15-day IL with a right abducted strain, while Baez is on the 10-day IL with a right ankle sprain. Left-hander Emmanuel De Jesus and infielder Jace Jung were recalled from AAA Toledo to take their spots on the roster. Mize exited with that right groin tightness on Tuesday, and then obviously Baez was carted off. Baez said he was feeling better after getting treatment, but it wasn't enough to avoid a stint on the injured list. Mize said it was kind of a great gradual tightening, the right-hander said after the game. We did some tests between innings and felt good enough to go back out there, but it just never really went away. So the All-Star from 2025, where he went 14-6, he's now 2-2 this year with a 2.90 ERA in his 6th starts to start this season. So that's something for Tigers fans to keep their eyes on moving forward through the next, obviously, you know, week and a half to 2 weeks, as they're both going to be out over that time. Baez should be back before Casey Mize. Heading into this weekend, the Tigers will take on the Rangers. This games will be at Comerica Park. The first game was last night, as you're listening to this, on Saturday, 6:40 p.m., Flaherty versus Gore. And then later today, 7:15 p.m. on Fox, Montero against Rocker. And then Sunday, the Tigers have not decided who will pitch in that game against Leader. It's a 7:20 first pitch on Peacock. And then Monday is the next series coming up for the Tigers. They will take on the Boston Red Sox, who they already took on earlier this year. And they split the series 2-2 out at Fenway Park in Boston. So 3 more games coming up for these two teams, as they will look to see if either team will be able to gain an advantage in the regular season series. But these three games will be Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week, the 4th, 5th, and 6th of May. Monday's game, 6:40 p.m. Scooble will be on the mound against Toll. Tuesday's May 5th matchup will be a 6:40 p.m. first pitch as well. Valdez against Bello. And then Wednesday's May 6th matchup, a 6:40 p.m. first pitch. Flaherty, Jack Flaherty, will be on the mound against undecided for the Red Sox, which leads us right into a one-day break on Thursday before the following series for the weekend gets started on Friday, May 8th. This series will be on the road against Kansas City. The Royals will host the Tigers 8th, 9th, and 10th, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 7:40 p.m., 7:10 p.m., and 7:20 p.m., respectively. Only game three of this series will be on Peacock, the other two on MLB TV. Montero slated to pitch game one for the Tigers against Bubik. Tigers are undecided on game two against Wacha, and then Scooble will take the mound in game three against Cameron. So, I mean, there's not a ton to say about what happened over the last week for the Tigers other than they were able to win just enough games to keep themselves 500 and keep themselves at the top of the AL Central. But they're going to have to catch a boost here against some tough teams. I mean, the Royals are a in-division matchup that you have to win in order to keep yourself at the top of that division and also just have that tiebreaker in the ground later in the season. And then the Red Sox, not only did you split with them earlier in the season in a four-game series on the road in Boston, but it's also a chance for you to prove that you can play at a high level. I mean, Boston is a routine MLB playoff team, and they play at the highest level. They have some of the biggest names in baseball. They have great pitching. So if you can continue to get hits off of a Red Sox pitching rotation, then some of the other rotations that you'll see throughout the season are not an issue, but you just have to kind of maintain and float here without, you know, one of your aces in Casey Mize, who's basically number two in your rotation behind Tarik Skubal. And then you also have to be without arguably your all-star, one of your best players and best batters and fielders in Javi Baez, who has really shown up since his move to center field. They liked him at shortstop and wanted to play him there, but it wasn't really working out. So they decided to make a move and move him to center field during last season, and he really took a spark. The bat woke up for him, and he was making amazing plays in the outfield. A big part of that push, they got the Tigers into the playoffs, but now you're without him for at least 10 days as he is on the 10-day injured list, but there is no guarantee that he'll be back in 10 days. He may have to sit on that list a little bit longer, and you know that your ace in Casey Mize is out for at least 15 days, if not longer, if he isn't able to make it off that injured list when that time comes around. So Tigers have some work to do over the next 2 to 2.5 weeks while they await these injured guys to be coming back. But they're in a great position. They're sitting at 500 atop of the AL Central and in control of their own destiny at the moment. When we come back from the break, because that's enough for the Tigers, we'll be talking about the transfer portal and the NBA draft here on 95.3 The Ticket.
Yeah, you. It's me, your heart. Listen to me. We've got to talk. High blood pressure is serious, and yours? Whoa. What happened to us? We used to be so much more active. But lately, you've been ignoring me. I know you think I'm just gonna keep ticking away forever, but you're wrong. You can do so much more to control your high blood pressure. Doing the minimum isn't doing enough. I'm under a lot of pressure and can quit whenever I want. Bet you didn't know that. But I like my job. Just treat me better. Check on me. Give me something green to nibble on every once in a while. And maybe we can do some exercise on occasion. Let's get to it. After all, we're in this together.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm gonna keep ticking, but no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, When I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes. We're diving into the NBA draft big board and a little bit of the transfer portal and coaching changes here in the state of Michigan, around the country as a whole, as that time is coming up. The number one prospect for this year's draft, AJ DeBonsa. Number two, Darren Peterson. Number three, Cameron Boozer. Number four, Caleb Wilson. Number five, Keaton Wagler, the point guard and shooting guard out of Illinois. Wagler centered his breakout season with a Final Four berth as the primary driver of an elite Illinois offense that stalled out against an experienced UConn team. Although he had some ups and downs in the tournament, Wagler's long-term upside was on full display. His smart decision-making, perimeter shooting at 39.7%, and positional size advantage give him an excellent foundation as he adds strength and gains experience. Darius Acuff Jr., point guard from Michigan that played at Arkansas. The Detroit native, Acuff, finished the season on a heater, leading Arkansas to a Sweet 16 berth in the SEC tournament title while winning SEC Player of the Year honors. It's hard to have a better freshman season than that, and he has vaulted himself into the mix of the top five candidate as the most NBA-ready of the talented freshman point guards. His ability to dictate game flow, elevate in traffic for tough jumpers, and find open teammates easily off the bounce gives him real offensive star power to boost his candidacy. He limited turnovers while handling a 29.5% usage rate and shooting 44% from behind the arc. He was phenomenal. Seven, Kingston Flemings. Eight, Nate Amet from Tennessee. Michael Brown Jr. Nine from Louisville. 10, Braden Burries. Number 11, Kareem Lopez, the New Zealand Breakers. Number 12, Yaxel Landenborg, obviously from Michigan. Landenborg's outstanding final college season culminated in a national title for Michigan, sending him into the pre-draft process with momentum. Although he will turn 24 in September, scouts view him as ready to contribute to a rotation, particularly coming off a strong close to the season in which he showcased his shot making, 52.9% from three in his final 11 games, and his ability to play in transition. It's difficult to find players like Landenborg who can play on the perimeter and guard multiple positions with his strong frame and 7'4" wingspan, enabling him to fit into all types of lineups while keeping size on the floor defensively. Although Landenborg's age points to limited developmental upside, that versatility should be of interest to any team in need of front court help beginning in the late lottery. Ade Mara comes in at 13 out of Michigan. Mara greatly helped himself during Michigan's championship run, turning into a significant performance, scoring 26 points against Arizona's excellent defensive front line in the Final Four. His strong close to the season, averaging 13.5 points, 6.1 rebounds, and 2.5 blocks in his final 24 games, helped rejuvenate his status as a prospect after two down years at UCLA. In a class that is light on obvious high upside talent at center, Mara's unusual mix of skills coupled with his huge frame warrants more serious consideration from teams looking to address the position. He's an excellent passer, skilled with the ball, and shot 66.8% from the field with the sheer size to be a deterrent defensively. It's a unique mix of traits that should at the very least help him succeed as a change of pace option in the NBA. He's a poor free throw shooter at just 56.4%. but had success down the stretch and flashed some capacity in warmups to eventually stretch his range beyond the arc. Heinz Steinbach comes in at 14. LeBaron Filon Jr. comes in at 15. Chris Sanok Jr. comes in at 16. Christian Anderson at 17. Jaden Quaintance at 18. Isaiah Evans at 19. Koa Pete at 20. Bennett Sturts at 21. Cameron Carr at 22. Dalen Swain at 23. Morris Johnson Jr. from Michigan at 24. Johnson played a major role on Michigan's championship team, providing defensive backbone and physical rebounding and significantly boosting his stock in the process. While undersized for a center, Johnson has plus physical tools and has shown to be switchable on the defensive end, making him a solid fit for teams hoping to get more athletic and tougher up front. Continuing to develop his spot-up shooting at 34.3%, would help expand his value on the other end, where he's somewhat limited to finishing plays. With the NBA trending back toward double big lineups, Johnson has an appealing profile as a plug-and-play depth option beginning in the mid-first round. Allen Graves from Santa Clara comes in at 25. Looking at the Big Ten for the rest of the top 100, Terrace Reed Jr., a transfer to UConn from Michigan, comes in at 37. Braden Smith, the point guard from Purdue, comes in at 41. Bruce Thornton, the point guard shooting guard from Ohio State, comes in at 50. Andre Stojakovic, the guard slash forward from Illinois, comes in at 52. Kylan Boswell, the combo guard from Illinois, comes in at 54. Jeremy Fears Jr., point guard from Michigan State, comes in at 61. John Blackwell, the Wisconsin transfer to Duke, comes in at 65. Oscar Clough, the center from Purdue, comes in at 67. Elliot Cadeau, point guard from Michigan, comes in at 70. Trey Kaufman Wren, the forward slash center for Purdue, comes in at 77. Tucker DeVries from Indiana comes in at 80 as a guard and forward. Minnesota's Jacob Coffey, the forward from USC, comes in at 88. Cade Tyson, the guard slash forward from Minnesota, comes in at 89. Nate Biddle, the center from Oregon, at 91. And Nick Boyd, the guard from Wisconsin, at 92. Lamar Wilkerson, the guard from Indiana, at 93. Fletcher Lawyer, the guard from Purdue, at 96. And that is all for the Big Ten in the top 100. They're going to take a quick peek at the most recent NBA draft, the mock draft, that is. Most recent mock draft has the Kings taking Darren Peterson at 1. The Wizards taking A.J. DeBonta at 2. Cameron Boozer goes to the Pacers at 3. Wilson to the Nets at 4. Flemings to the Jazz at 5. Wagler to the Hawks via New Orleans. Okay, interesting. At 6, the Mavericks take Darius Acuff Jr. at 7. Michael Brown Jr. goes to the Grizzlies at 8. Nate Amet goes to the Bulls at 9. Burries to the Bucks at 10. Kareem Lopez to the Trailblazers at 11. Thomas Haw at 12 to the Spurs. Braylon Mullins at 13 to the Warriors. Jaden Quintance at 14 to the Hornets. Haynes Steinbach at 15 to the Thunder. Christian Anderson at 16 to the Thunder. Yaxel Landenborg at 17 to the Grizzlies. LeBaron Filon Jr. to the Raptors at 18. Koa Pete at 19 to the Hornets. Bennett Sturts at 20 to the Heat. Motiejus Krivas to the Lakers at 21. Chris Sanok Jr. to the Pistons at 22. Cameron Carr to the Nuggets at 23. Ade Mara to the 76ers at 24. Isaiah Evans to the Hawks at 25. Patrick Gamba to the Celtics at 26. Maurice Johnson to the Knicks at 27. Amari Allen to the Cavs at 28. Daylon Swain to the Timberwolves at 29. And then Tunde Yusofu to the Mavericks at 30 for the first round. Dame Saar goes to the Kings in round 2. Tyler Tanner to the Knicks in round 2. Alex Condon to the Grizzlies at 33. Juke Harris to the Nets at 34. Caravan to the Spurs at 35. Henry Vassar to the Bulls at 36. Joshua Jefferson at 37 to the Thunder. Malik Thomas at 38 to the Clippers. Zubi Ejiofor to the Rockets at 39. Braden Smith to the Celtics at 40. Adam Atma to the Spurs at 41. Ryan Conwell from Louisville to the Nuggets at 42. Elijah Arenas at 43 to the Heat. Flori Badunga to the Kings at 44. Milan Maklunovic to the Nets at 45. Price Sanford to the Suns at 46. Orlando Magic take Ruben Chiyolu at 47. Sergio De Laura to the Raptors at 48. Dash Daniels to the Mavericks at 49. Jaden Bradley to the Spurs at 50. Baba Miller at 51 to the Warriors. Terrace Reed Jr. 52 to the Wizards. Bruce Thornton 53 to the Bulls. Kylan Boswell 54 to the Rockets. Emmanuel Sharp 55 to the Clippers. Richie Saunders 56 to the Hawks. Solo Ball 57 to the Knicks. Timberwolves take Milos Yuzan at 58. Malik Brown 59 to the Pelicans. And the Wizards take Trayvon Brazil at 60. That's all the coverage we have for the NBA draft and college movement at the moment. We'll check back in next week, but we're getting into our picks when we come back from the break here on Mid Madness on 95.3 The Tick. Limited. Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes, and it's time for my favorite part of the show. It is our picks. And with the picks, well, it's always fun to decide pick on games and who's going to win and see if you know anything about ball. Sometimes I like to say I know about ball, and other times ball likes to prove to me that I know absolutely nothing, and it's absolutely unpredictable, because that's the best thing about sports is absolutely anything can happen in any game, because it's all about which team shows up on that day. You can play right along in the picks with us anytime you would like using the chat feature in the 95.3 The Ticket app. Just listen to the games and the matchups that we pick for the picks every single week. It's six of them. And then you're going to hear me deliberate, talk, and hear all of the great knowledge that I've brought together to decide on who's going to pick the game. And then I make my picks and tell you why they're going to be right. And of course, sometimes they are, and well, other times they are not. And then you have the option to go back and do your own deliberation and research and bring all your knowledge together to put together your perfect list of picks. And you don't have to explain to me why they're going to work. You just got to submit them to the chat feature on 95.3 The Ticket app. And we'll see if you know ball any better than I do. And maybe, just maybe, if you're able to beat me in a season of picks, we can find you something special here. Because, you know, we like to hook up our listeners and the ones that engage the most. So if you can beat me in a round of picks, we will have something special for you. But with that being said, last week would have been a good week to get it on the picks against me. Because, man, once again, ball showed me it's unpredictable and you know nothing. The Battlehawks took down the Storm, picked up an L there. The Aviators lost to the Gamblers, another L there. The Kings beat the Renegades, yep. Post an L to my forehead. The Pistons lost to the Magic in game three. You know what that means. Another L. The Hawks couldn't get it done in game four against the Knicks. Give me one more L. The saving grace for me last week was the Timberwolves taking down the Nuggets in game four. So that gave me one win on the week. I went 1-5. So I'm up to 37-28-1 on this season of picks. So hopefully this week can go far better for me and I can be in a much better scenario than I was in, looking at my picks after this weekend. We'll start in the baseball lands over in Comerica Park here in Michigan and Detroit. The Red Sox will be coming for a three-game series starting on Monday, May 4th, the 5th, and the 6th, so Tuesday and Wednesday as well. They all are 640 first pitches. Coming up in game one, Peyton Toll will pitch against Tarek Skubal. Toll on the year is 0-1 with a 3.38 ERA. His whip 1.03. That's in 10.2 innings. He's given up 6 hits, 15 strikeouts. Only walked 5 runners, 1 home run given up. Skubal's 3-2, 2.70 ERA, 0.95 whip, 43.1 innings pitched, given up 35 hits, 45 strikeouts. 6 walks, 2 home runs given up. In their first series against each other, they split 2-2. Red Sox won game 1, 1-0 on the 17th. Tigers won game 2, 4-1 on the 18th. Then they won game 3, 6-2 on the 19th. And then the Red Sox bounced back in game 4, 1-8-6 on the 20th. So now they're back 3 more games to find out who's going to win the season series. But I really like the Tigers in game one. With Skubal on the mound, I feel confident anytime he's on the mound to go out and have success. They also like the Tigers in this matchup. 72.4%, 27.6 for Boston. Boston is 7-11 on the road, 12-19 at the moment. Tigers are 10-2 at home with their 16-16 record. In game two, Framber Valdez will pitch against Brayon Bello. Tigers have a 67.6% chance, a 32.4% chance for Boston. Bello's 1-4, 9.12 ERA, 2.26 whip in 25.2 innings, 43 hits, 17 strikeouts, 15 walks, 8 home runs. Valdez 2-1, 3.35 ERA, 1.26 whip and 40.1 innings pitched, 37 hits, 32 strikeouts, 14 walks, and 2 home runs. Feeling a little bit weary about that, but with Bello having such a high ERA, there's a chance the Tigers come up with a Game 2 victory as well. The Red Sox are undecided in Game 3 on who will pitch against Jack Flaherty. Flaherty's 0-2, 5.33 ERA, 1.74 whip, and 25.1 innings, 22 hits, 28 strikeouts, 22 walks, and 4 home runs. I have the Tigers winning this series 2-1. That's my pick. I'm not going to explain too much about it because after Skubal, I don't feel confident. But seeing Bello with a 9.12 ERA does make me feel a little bit better. I'm locking in the Tigers going 2-1. So now let's bump over to the UFL, which did me dirty last week. I only got 2 matchups running this week, starting with the Renegades and the Defenders. The Defenders have come from nowhere after losing their first game of the year. They're 4-1 now, a plus 73 in the point differential, putting up 172-4, only giving up 99, winning 4 games in a row now. They're on a heater, but they're going to be taking on the Renegades, who have also been on a little bit of a heater. Or excuse me, they're on a downslide. They've lost 2 in a row. They have a plus 4 score differential, 134 points for, 130 points against. And I like trends, and this trend tells me that the DC Defenders are arguably the best team in the league. And the Renegades are on a slide, and it's going to take a lot for them to get back. I'm not sure that you want to go blow for blow with the Defenders to be trying to get your season back on track. I've got to rock with the Defenders here because all the numbers and the metrics and the momentum point towards the Defenders continuing that winning streak, bumping it to 5, and continuing to be the best team in the UFL at this moment. That bumps me over to my other game within the UFL. It is the Storm against the Stallions. They have opposite records. The Renegades and Defenders will play noon ABC later today. And then the Storm and Stallions will play 4 p.m. on Fox tomorrow on Sunday. These two teams having drastically different seasons. The Stallions sitting at the bottom of the UFL, a negative 37 differential, 130 points against, only 93 points for. They're on a 4-game losing streak after winning their first game of the year. Meanwhile, they're going to take on the Storm, who, I mean, they lost their first game of the year last week, and they are plus 27, 104 points for, only 77 given up, but they're 4-1 on the year. The Stallions really struggling, and yes, they need some help. Maybe the Storm start to slide like the Renegades. The Renegades lost 1, and then all of a sudden they lost 2. So maybe that happens to the Storm, but I'm not sure I feel confident about that being the case with the Stallions sitting at the bottom of the league, second in points for, but they're not giving up a lot of points, but neither are the Storm. The Storm are actually sitting at the bottom of the league in points against, so that's also a huge factor against the Stallions in this game, which is going to have me rocking with the Storm as well to go ahead and win this game, improving themselves to 5-1, getting them back in the win column. Now we're stepping inside of the octagon for our next matchup in the UFC Fight Night later today. It's super early. So it was this morning, but hey, that's what happens when I'm allowed to do what I want. The prelims were at 4 a.m. The main card started at 7. Jack Della Maddalena versus Carlos Prates. Prates is the main event in the welterweight division. Maddalena is 5'11", 170 pounds, 29 years old, 73 inches, switch fighter at 5.57 significant strikes LPM. He's sitting at a 55.77 accuracy on those strikes as well. He's 18-3. Meanwhile, Prates is 23-7. He stands 6'1", 170 pounds, 32 years old, 78 inches in the reach, switch fighter as well, 3.77 significant strikes on the LPM. He's 55.42% on his accuracy on those strikes. I mean, this one for me was a little bit harder to pick. They're very similar in the metrics, but I mean, there's a 5-inch reach advantage for Maddalena, or for Prates. Prates also has a 2-inch height advantage here. So he may be a little bit longer. Maddalena may be a little bit quicker. He lands just a few more significant strikes at just a slightly higher percentage. But that doesn't mean that this won't go down to a takedown. And Prates is also 100% in his takedown accuracy, which he doesn't do too often within a match. So this could be a fighting match as Madalena, the Australian, will fight Prates, the Brazilian. But I like the metrics and the reach and the height advantage for Prates if this is going to be a standing battle. So I'm leaning with Prates in this one to win early in Perth, Australia. Although this is a home fight for Madalena, I should be picking him to win at the Rack Arena. But I'm going to go against what many people will probably feel is the favorite in this matchup, which gets us over into the NBA. Starting with game one of the West semifinals against the Timberwolves and the Spurs, which will be Monday, May 4th. They have not announced the time just yet, but it will be at the Frost Bank Center in San Antonio, Texas. 77% chance for the Spurs, 23% chance for the Timberwolves. Anthony Edwards is out at the moment with a knee injury. They're saying he should return by May 9th. Not 100% sure. Dante DiVincenzo out for the season after tearing his Achilles in the playoffs. And then Kyle Anderson and Ayo Dosunmu both out with illness and calf decisions. Their game time decisions for that Monday game. I mean, hey, even if they were going to play, Anthony Edwards would probably still be out, which would make a big difference in this matchup if he played. So honestly, with an abundance of caution, when you look at who's on the other side, Dylan Harper has been playing out of his mind. Stephon Castle, unreal. And then obviously Victor Wembanyama. And they still have more behind that have been playing at a phenomenal level. So I'm going to take the Spurs to win game one, even if some of those other guys end up playing that are game time decisions. Our last matchup going to be a game seven East first round. The 76ers traveling up to Boston later today, 7:30 p.m. 74.6% chance for Boston, 25.4% chance for Philly at the Garden. Boston wins game one, 123-91. Philly game two, 111-97. Boston wins games three and four, 108-100, 128-96. Game five and six go to Philly, 113-97, 106-93. That lands us to game seven. And I mean, I got to lean to the Celtics. I mean, they're at home playing in TD Garden in a game seven. Last chance to advance their season, or they're going to be headed home. I think it's going to be close. The line's at 7.5, and I'm not sure it's even going to be I think that will get covered by the Sixers, and it's going to be a very fun game to watch. But I got the Celtics winning. That gives me the Celtics, the Spurs, Defenders, Storm, Prates, and the Tigers winning 2-1 over the Red Sox. Don't forget to check out some of that Tigers action here on 95.3 The Ticket. We'll be back next week with more Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket with your host, Dejon Hughes.
Join Dejon Hughes every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Miss the show or want to run it back? Stream Mitten Madness on demand on the WBCK app, sponsored by AirwayCashForJunkCars.com.